This is the Out of Time Film Podcast, where your hosts, Tom and John, discuss everything from blockbuster films to TV and games like there's no tomorrow.
Hello and welcome to the Out of Time Film Podcast. I'm Tom.
I'm John.
And this week we're talking about Deadpool 2.
Yes, we've talked about the first one recently, so go check that out. And I was really worried that Deadpool 2, is it still going to live up the hype? I really enjoyed, you know, it came out in 2018, and this was comic book movies at its peak, where there were so many films that were centering around big, huge events like Infinity War. And it was just so interesting to see how an R-rated, you know, comic book movie was going to do in this space. But yeah, I had a great time watching it again. This is so much better than the first one. How about you, Tom? What do you think?
I agree. I think right now, as it stands with the two that we have seen, it truly comes into its own. You watch it and you're truly like, oh, okay, I get it. I know where we're going with this. Everything feels more confident and comfortable. I think the story is stronger. I think it's a better looking film. I want to preface before we start, we're doing the theatrical cut, not the super duper cut, because Disney Yes. Plus apparently hates any kind of alternate cut, even if it is superior. I mean, you know, the rogue cut of Days of Future Past and the Unleashed extended edition of The Wolverine, you are sorely missed. But no, so we are doing the theatrical cut. And you know, I've also seen Once Upon a Deadpool, which is the PG-13 cut where they have him reading the story to Fred Savage, which is really fun. And I think that this film is a fantastic time, but also has so much heart. I think it really soars in ways that the first one didn't.
Yeah, and there is a flair, there's a visual flair in this movie. This is directed by no other than David Leitch.
Yes.
And if you look at David Leitch's film, they have so much vibrant colors. And the first one was really like that, and it just didn't really have any memorable shots. But in this one, you could tell there's some really interesting moments with the set pieces.
I think that this film, just immediately, because, you know, you get the whole sequence where he's going through various different gangs and he's in like a Yakuza spot, you know, and it's like bluish green kind of tint and there's some like neon red. Immediately you're like, oh, this film is so much more interesting. There's going to be so much more visually interesting. And I think that throughout the direction, and I actually found out the other day, David Leitch was the second unit director on The Wolverine. So this isn't his first rodeo into superhero films. And that film as well has a lot of fantastic shots, a lot of fantastic action. And I think him paired with James Mangold is a really magnificent duo. But it's really great in this one to see those action sequences, like the convoy, which I think is some of the most exciting action. Like, you know, there's one like unbroken take when Domino lands and she's running and there's like cars like flipping over her and she's kind of running in slow motion. I think it's a really fun thing to expand the universe, to give us more heroes with more powers. I think the X-Force scene might be the funniest scene in any comic book movie ever.
It has to be.
I remember seeing it in 2018 and just losing it. And even now rewatching it. We said when we did the first Deadpool that the comedy isn't always there. And I think that comedy will always be hit or miss. This film's comedy, I think, is stronger than the first Deadpool's. It's a level of humor that I feel I have grown beyond. It is the kind of thing that like a young teen might enjoy. But that X-Force sequence with Thunderstruck by AC/DC playing is just perfection.
It's brilliant. I absolutely love that scene. It's just the absurdity of like Deadpool trying to get these bunch of people and it just goes horribly wrong. And it's just so funny, but also really messed up as well. And it's just like with the Deadpool movies, something can go really wrong or sometimes serious as well. Deadpool 2 has a really good balance. I felt really happy rewatching it. I was like, yeah, there is something that you can balance with the jokes, but also with the emotional tones of the movie. And there's so many emotional beats in this movie and they work so well. And it's quite funny because the first one is struggling with its emotional beats. It's struggling with all of it because it's messy structure and with its characters, there wasn't really anything strong in that movie that I was like, oh, okay. But then Deadpool 2, It just made it like, here's some really good characters. I mean, you got Josh Brolin as Cable, and he was also an interesting character. And then Russell was a really interesting character as well. It's just those characters that really reflect Deadpool in this movie. And Deadpool has a really strong character arc. But with the comedy, yeah, I agree. It was just so much better than the first one because they explored different ideas of comedy in this one, like maybe slapstick comedy or the dirty jokes from the first one continued that. But it just felt like they had something with the comedy and it just continued to, like, if you look at Bullet Train, for example, they continuously push forward the comedy and never stop going with it. It's just so chaotic, this movie.
Yeah, there's even some fun stuff, like he refers to Cable as Thanos at one point, and even for a film that came in 2018, as you said earlier, just a couple weeks after Infinity War, it's fun to have that kind of referential stuff. And, you know, I've watched the Deadpool and Wolverine trailer, which I think is a fantastic trailer, but already I'm a kind of wondering how well the jokes are going to endure, because they feel like they're all like, haha, we're being so edgy because we're in the MCU and we're being R-rated and that's never happened. Like, you know, it's difficult to kind of get that organic. I know that Deadpool 3 has also suffered from strikes and stuff like that. You know, obviously we'll be talking about that in a couple of weeks, but there's just so many points in this film that I just think it's not perfect, but you've really, really enhanced everything the first film gave us. And I think this film is so brilliantly paced and structured. It works well. We do get a little bit of the flashing back and forward at the beginning of the film, but it doesn't feel nearly as tiring because they just get it done with. They give you a cold open and then they go straight into the backstory behind that. We get a wonderful James Bond-esque credit scene. They're kind of switching it up a little bit. They're not giving us exactly what we had in the first film, but they are kind of keeping that tone, keeping that vibe. And I really love how they have improved. Like, I think Cable is a really, really great villain because he's not that mustache twirling, you know, evil guy that they were going for with Ajax. He's just a father who is grieving the loss of his daughter and his wife and wants to stop it at no cost. And I think that makes him so good because he's not unreasonable. I think this is a good chance to get into spoilers as well. He literally goes to Wade at the end, you know, for help. You see that he can be reasoned with because he's not just like a maniac. But I really loved that view of a broken man who harbors so much pain and is this unstoppable force physically, will do anything to get this justice that he believes. But at the same time, he's somebody who is haunted by these memories and drinks to try and get them out. And I really loved him as a character. It's such a shame that he's not going to be in Deadpool 3. I mean, maybe he will be in a small capacity, but as far as we know, he's not in it. And I think he was such a brilliant addition. Like, it's like him and Domino Russell as well. Those are the three main additions. And they're all so great. And they all add new layers. Like what we get with Russell as a kid, we see that innocence and we see the kind of torture that some kids in this world of mutants go through, and how Deadpool, who through jokes in the first film, we learned that he had a very difficult upbringing. And we kind of see through Russell that reflected. And there's the whole kind of idea of found family that Wade gains and, you know, his F word, as it were. I think that's all so good. And to have that be the core of the film, I think it works really, really nicely.
It is a really emotional path for Wade in this story. Because, you know, from the beginning, he loses Vanessa. And that was such a cold way to open the story. And you can really see this downfall. You know, he literally loses that piece of him, you know, from Vanessa. It's just like, wow, this is something that, how does he go through that grief? And he is kind of immortal, so it's like, how can he die? And that sets up that great arc for Wade to understand family, not Vin Diesel, about finding family and how he can help others to prove he can be better who he was in the past. And Cable is a great example of that. He is driven by revenge. He wants to kill Russell in this story, and he slowly gains who he was by working with Deadpool and then working with the X-Force in a way, or the X-Men. The X-Force is dead.
No, John, the X-Force lives.
X-Force. Yeah, I really like that. It just sets that dynamic between them, because Wade is almost about to lose everything about himself. And it's like, how can he prove himself better than he was at the beginning of the film? Because he let Vanessa die in the most accidental way. And it's like traumatizing for him. But the ending just sets that really well. It's like he doesn't want to let go, but it is a great way for Deadpool to learn. Because you don't really learn a lot in Deadpool 1. because the foundation of that film is the jokes, and it's just like bubble breaking and, you know, trying to find love again. And you can't really understand that message somewhere in that story, because it's just like, oh, I guess there's some CGI fights and some car chases in that movie. But in this one, it's so vivid, it's there. And that ending when he says, I can't really let go, and then Take On Me, the different version of Take On Me, and it's so emotional. Like, oh my God, I was like kind of tearing up. I was just like, they actually made Deadpool really emotional. That reunion between Vanessa and Wade was really beautiful with that Take On Me song. And it just really wraps up what the movie was all about. It's just like Wade's heart was not in the right place and slowly but learned about himself. Really like that.
Yeah. When we did the first Deadpool, you spoke about Wade's relationship with death and his own immortality. And it's interesting to see him process his own grief and guilt and, you know, trying to kill himself throughout that kind of opening and how his own rock bottom manifests. And I have to say, in the super duper cut, there is a whole montage of him killing himself in different ways. And I think it's really interesting seeing him trying to do that and how eventually the solution is just to turn off his mutation and let himself die from his cancer, from his wounds. And I found that really interesting. And in the last film, there's a couple of really great needle drops, but mainly I think the score is nothing. In this one, the score is Tyler Bates. And I do think there are some good moments in the score, but it's still nothing special. But the needle drops this time really elevate it. I think Ashes by Celine Dion and that kind of like piano. I think that piano motif that plays at the beginning of that song, which we get a couple times throughout the film, is a really powerful and emotional thing. I think the first film does enough heavy lifting to really make Vanessa's death impactful and powerful. And even stuff like The Sun Will Come Out Tomorrow that I mentioned, John's going to do a little thing for you. That's the song that Cable's family were listening to when they died. Even that playing at the end, there's layers to the emotional meaning to it. Or Take On Me, the actual version of Take On Me was playing when Vanessa died. And so the unplugged version playing at the end. I really like all those kinds of layers to it. I think it's really great. I must say though, Wade's death at the end, even though it's a fake out, I remember thinking this at the time, it's way too dragged out. And I think they really, really should have focused on the emotions of the scene to sell the entirety of the sequence, because, you know, he goes and he meets with Vanessa, and that is actually when we get that emotion. But beforehand, it's too comedic to see it as real. You never for a moment think, oh, this could actually be happening. But they keep on making it, I think, a bit too fun. Like, it would work so much better for those themes and the idea of like this family that he's created if the people surrounding him actually felt, and the audience felt, the true weight of that sacrifice. I always thought it was a really frustrating thing that kind of undercuts that moment of sacrifice.
I agree with that. That death was just setting up like, oh yeah, it could be a fake out, or it could be for real this time. And why did they need to drag that out? It just felt so unnecessary. And it was a really weird segue, this really weird emotional segue into Vanessa and Wade reunion. And then Cable really wants to give thanks to Wade, because Wade really changes at the end of the movie. I mean, there is that idea of family. You know, family always got your back, you know? They always... Vin Diesel, you know, they always got your back.
I saw that in your face then. You were like trying to figure out a way to not make this about Fast and Furious, but you just can't.
It's such an integral thing in my mind.
How can we not talk about family when family is all that we've got?
Damn. Thank it's you. Been Thank you very a long
day. Oh, we're back.
Don't know a bunch of that song. Anyway, so...
No, but the thing is that the whole film kind of deals with the emotional arc of Vanessa's death and Wade considering his own place in the world. And what I really love is how they let those emotions throughout the film lie. They don't make those scenes with Vanessa where he reunites with her like throughout the film and he's trying to get to her and the feelings that he feels. They let those be emotional. They don't let them be comedic. And because of that, because they let those things be emotional, I actually don't mind that they bring her back at the end in the post-credit scene. Yeah. I think the post-credit scene is probably one of the best post-credit scenes ever, just because it's so Deadpool, and they have let the emotions happen. They've let the film end. This is kind of what a post-credit scene should be. And obviously I know that like it's a big part of the plot and they kind of rely on people having watched it. And I think at that point you can. I think people kind of know to stay until the end now, especially like if it's a mid-credit scene. I remember when I went to go see Infinity War, the second time after the film ended, I just left because I was like, yeah, I've seen the post-credit scene. Not a single other person in a packed cinema left because they all knew that that's kind of like part of the etiquette of these kinds of films. So I don't really mind that they change it and they bring Vanessa back. And that time travel sequence with if I could turn back time and he saves Peter.
If I can turn back time.
He's back. He's doing it again.
I can't stop doing it. Okay. It's a really bad thing. I would listen to that soundtrack like every day, like since the movie came out. It hasn't been every day.
How many days has it been?
No, not every day. When the movie came out, I was like, you know what? I'm going to listen to the soundtrack. And there were some pretty good bangers in there. I would just listen to Tomorrow and I'll listen to If I Can Turn Back Time. And then I'm All Out of Love. Yeah.
Very nice.
Oh my god.
No, but that's such a good sequence because
it is.
You know, you watch it, you
get
all
back
these things.
In time.
The X-Men Origins bit is so, because you know, before Deadpool and Wolverine, I've watched all the X-Men films, including X-Men Origins, and you get to that moment in the film when you see that Deadpool and you just kind of think to yourself, what were they thinking? And so to see him come back and kill, and in the super duper cut, and I have no idea why this was cut, but there is a really great line where Deadpool says to X-Men Origins Hugh Jackman, he says, one day your old pal Wade is going to tell you to come back. And I think that's really cool, actually. You know, I'm not a fan of bringing back Hugh Jackman for the next film. We're going to see how that goes for sure. But I love the idea that it was kind of set up in the last film and that it felt inevitable. I really like that. And obviously the Green Lantern bit as well. I think it's so fun.
And it's funny, around this time, Logan came out. Logan was 2017. Yes. It was a year before Deadpool 2. But Deadpool 2 was actually, you know, joking around the idea of Logan and Wolverine dying. So kind of it was more about like relating to the death of superheroes. Because once again, it's so weird that they're going to bring back Hugh Jackman for Wolverine for this one. Because again, I really don't know how they're going to justify this whole, you know, Logan, he died. Such an emotional movie to go through. It's depressing. But lingers on looking back at the good old days as an X-Men and, you know, do all of that. And such a brilliant movie. But now it's just like, oh, guys, he's back. He's back in Deadpool and Wolverine, guys.
Obviously, the Wolverine that we're going to see in this upcoming film is a variant or whatever. But Logan was so powerful because it represented the ending of two actors, Hugh Jackman and Patrick Stewart, who had been in these roles for almost two decades. And it was representing a goodbye to them. It was somber. It was solemn. It was emotional. It was something different. And it really was deserving of that. And, you know, it was a perfect send-off. It wasn't a send-off to Wolverine the character. We're going to have other Wolverines. And I want to see another Wolverine played by somebody else. It was a send-off to the actors. And there's a moment at the end of this where Vanessa says to Wade that he will find out why his family needs him. And that's really great. But it's a massive shame that Deadpool 3 is seemingly just going in a completely different direction. And it's not going to be following him and his family or Cable, who promises to stick around, but he's not even going to be in Deadpool and Wolverine. It's a really unfortunate thing that a lot of superhero trilogies suffer from, where the final film in a trilogy is kind of held back by a wider universe. We saw it with Captain America, Ant-Man, Guardians, Thor, Spider-Man, and now Deadpool. All these films, you know, I guess in Spider-Man's case, the second film, it's like this doesn't work as its own trilogy. It works in relation to an Avengers film or something else in the MCU that's kind of, you know, sometimes they manage to carry the story and the themes of the other films. But I think it's a massive shame that we're not going to get Deadpool 3 that is focused on all the characters we followed so far. It looks like we're going to get a ton of cameos, but for what? You know, is it going to be worth it?
It's really uncharted territory right here. It's just like, what are they going to do right now? And this is Marvel's comeback right now since Loki, I guess.
The Marvels? That was the last film. Yeah,
true. So it's just like, what are they trying to aim for this time? And, you know, are they just going to serve this story for like a higher multiversal story? You know, is it going to be a high concept for this next stage in the Marvel Universe? It just doesn't feel like we're in a proper saga right now. It just feels like, okay, here's Deadpool and Wolverine. It's a very odd choice because we have Deadpool, which is like a comedic character. And how do you put that in the MCU where it is going to like a multiversal threat with Kang the Conqueror? We might not be continuing Kang the Conqueror.
We don't know what any of this means or whatever. I just hope that Deadpool and Wolverine is good. I don't expect it to be as good as Deadpool 2. I'd like it for it to be as good as Deadpool 1, maybe even better. That would be lovely.
Yes.
But it just, none of it sits well with me and I'm really struggling. However, I have to say, and I kind of mentioned this earlier, but the trailer for Deadpool and Wolverine is fantastic. Not because of the jokes or because of the visuals, but the editing of that trailer and using Madonna's Like a Prayer, it's fantastic. I've seen it a couple times only in the cinema, and every time you get like the kind of like organ and the life is a mist, I'm just like, yes, yeah, just like a prayer, I'll take it. I'm just like dancing along, like, yeah, like, you know, what can I say? The marketing has worked on me. It makes me so much more hopeful for this film because I think it is a really good and well put together trailer.
Yes.
I just really hope, you know, we're going to be covering it on the pod in 2 weeks' time, and I'm just really hopeful this is a great film because I don't have the energy for anything other than that.
Yeah.
You know, I might just be tired.
Yeah. But let's get back to Deadpool 2. So Deadpool 2,
yeah.
I think this is one of my big R-rated movies I've seen on the big screen. And it was just like really exciting for me because all the things I've heard about Deadpool, and I was like, okay, I want to watch this. And it was so, so different for me. It was just like at that time when I was watching John Wick and having that audience who were just losing it in the cinema. It's just a great experience. And I really miss that. I'm hoping maybe Deadpool and Wolverine might bring back that excitement to watch comedies again.
Yeah, like, you know, I'm currently unemployed. So I have all, you know, on the day that Deadpool and Wolverine comes out, I have all day. I could see it whatever time I want. But specifically, I think I'm going to wait until the evening because I think I will have a better experience if I'm there with a bunch of people. Just like something like The Batman or No Way Home. I'm thinking about, you know, recent big films that I really enjoyed to see with an audience. And that's always so, so valuable. But yeah, I don't know if it will be as good as Deadpool 2. I think this film is, it's not perfect. The jokes don't always land. The fake out death isn't ready for me. I think the CGI is a bit shaky at times, but you know, it does go for that wider scope than the first film. Obviously, allegedly, that's why Tim Miller left as director. But I think it basically does everything it needs to do and everything it wanted to do really, really well. And for that, I will be grateful. What are you going to give Deadpool 2 out of 10?
I'm giving it an 8 out of 10. I thought this is so much better. It just had a structure. There's like a visual flair. And a lot of comic movies are kind of missing that.
Yeah, yeah. I absolutely agree with all of that. I think 8 out of 10. I'd also go for that. Thank you everybody for listening. If you're listening on YouTube and you liked it, you can like and subscribe if you want to see more. And if you're listening on Spotify or Apple, you can follow and give us a 5-star review if you think we're worthy. And next week, oh my God, we are going into the fray. We're talking about The Acolyte, which currently I love so much. But obviously that, what a can of worms to get into. And you can send us an email at ourstimefilmpod@gmail.com. Let us know your thoughts on The Acolyte. We'll be recording next Saturday, so let us know your thoughts by then, and we'll answer it right here on the podcast next week.
Yes, and you can follow us on Instagram at Out of Time Film Pod to see our incredible thumbnails from Zane Aswell, on Twitter for more thoughts from Tom and me, and TikTok to see edited clips, which are also on Instagram Reels and YouTube Shorts. And you can find links to that all in the description below. Thanks to Elgin Smith for the excellent theme and Ronan Phillips for vocals as always. And I think that's everything. Take what you
give. Give nothing back.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.